content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Well, hello, everyone. It's always good to be back. And let's go ahead and talk about some Reader's Digest things, including what dictionary editors say is the most misused word in the English language. It's literally the opposite of what you'd expect. A traffic jam when you're already late? A free ride when you're already paid? The fact that the King James Bible is the most shoplifted book in the United States? Now that's interesting. One of these three things is an example of irony, the reversal of what is expected or intended. The other two, no offense to Alison Morissette, are not. The difference between them may be one of the most rage-inducing linguistic misunderstanding you're likely to read about on the Internet or hear about from the determined grammar nerds in your life. Ironic does not technically mean unfortunate, interesting, or coincidental, despite these terms often being used interchangeably. And that frequent misuse has not escaped linguists, according to the editors of Dictionary.com. We submit that ironic might be the most abused word in the English language. That's a tough claim to prove, but it's clear that confusion over the definition of irony is persistent and decades old. Irony makes Harvard linguist Steven Pinker's list of 58 most commonly misused words in English and ranks in the top 1% of all words lookups on Merriam-Webster's online dictionary. Even Great Gatsby, Arthur F. Scott Fitzgerald, got it wrong, some say, when he claimed in 1939 it is an ironic thought that the last picture job I took yielded me $5,500 and cost over $4,000 in medical attention. That's not ironic. But these 25 examples of irony are in real life, and I don't have those. I'm sorry, I'll come back to that. So what does irony mean, really? And where does the confusion come from? Part of the ambiguity probably stems from the fact that there are no fewer than three definitions of irony, depending on which dictionary you use. There's a Socratic irony, an ancient rhetorical move, dramatic irony, an ancient theatrical move, and the definition of irony we care about, then the kind that's the most bitterly debated, is situational irony. Situational irony occurs when, as the Oxford English Dictionary defines it, a state of affairs or an event seems deliberately contrary to what one expects and is awfully wryly amusing as a result. The trick, according to purists, is the deliberately contrary part. For a situation to be ironic, it must be the opposite of what is expected, not merely an amusing coincidence. A traffic jam when you're already late may be an understandable coincidence, but it's not the opposite outcome one would expect when leaving for work late, especially if that person lives in a major city. In an article titled Lines from Alanis Morissette's Ironic, modified to actually make them ironic, college humor writer Patrick Cassells corrects a situation like this. A traffic jam when you're already late, to receive an award from the Municipal Planning Board for reducing the city's automobile congestion, is 80%. Now that's irony. Not every linguist goes by this limited view, though. Ever champions of fluid language growth, Merriam-Webster argues that Mr. Fitzgerald, Miss Morissette, anyone else who uses ironic to mean coincidental, isn't actually wrong, but is actually just trailblazing. The word irony has come to be applied to events that are merely curious or coincidental, the editors write, and while some feel this is an incorrect use of the word, it's merely a new one. Now let's take a quick look at those 30 funny examples of irony in real life. The definition of irony, a situation that is strange or funny because things happen in a way that seems the opposite of what you expected. When it comes to finding an example of irony, life proves stranger than funnier than fiction. These ironic examples will raise anyone's eyebrows and bring a laugh or two. What's ironic about the Bible? One of the most interesting irony examples is the most shoplifted book in America is the Bible. What's ironic about Alcoholics Anonymous? The founder of AA asked for whiskey on his deathbed. The nurse refused. What's ironic about McDonald's? One of the most hilarious examples of irony. McDonald's employees' health page, which is now shut down, once warned against eating McDonald's burgers and fries. What's ironic about a Charlie Brown Christmas? Every year, ABC cuts down a Charlie Brown Christmas, a movie about the over-commercialization of the holidays, to make room for more commercials. What's ironic about Charlie Chaplin? He once entered a Charlie Chaplin walk contest and came in 20th. If you think he's ironic, oh, never mind, that's part of it. What's ironic about the invention of the What's ironic about the inventor of the stop sign? Father of traffic safety, William Eno, invented the stop sign, crosswalk, traffic circle, one-way street, and taxi stand. But he never learned how to drive. A prime example of irony, as he never got the chance to benefit from his own inventions. What's ironic about the Church of Scientology? The Cult Awareness Network, CAN, once a leading anti-cult hotline, is now owned by the Church of Scientology. What's ironic about Al Capone? Al Capone's older brother was a federal prohibition agent. What's ironic about the man who invented basketball? The only losing basketball coach in the University of Kansas history is James Naismith, the man who invented basketball in 1891. This hilarious example of irony proves that just because you thought of the idea doesn't always mean you'll be the best at executing it. And what's ironic about Pizza Hut? Before 2012, the largest purchaser of kale in America was Pizza Hut. They use it as garnish around their salad bars. What's ironic about Julius Caesar? The site where Julius Caesar was murdered in 44 BC is now a no-kill animal shelter for homeless cats. What's ironic about Alexander Graham Bell? Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone but refused to keep one in his study. He feared it would distract him from his work. What's ironic about duct tape? According to researchers, duct tape should never be used for sealing ducts. What's ironic about a hotel made of ice? Another funny example of irony is Sweden's famous ice hotel has a smoke detector. What's ironic about a man who survived going over Niagara Falls? The first man to survive going over Niagara Falls in a barrel died later after slipping on an orange peel. What's ironic about the inventor of liquid paper? She was fired from her secretarial job for failing to white out a mistake. She also became a multimillionaire because she invented it. What's ironic about a speech disorder? The condition of not being able to pronounce the letter R is called rhotism, R-H-O-T-I-C-I-S-M. What's ironic about Q-tips? Q-tips, which are usually brought primarily to clean the inside of your ears, are sold in boxes that expressly warn, do not insert in the ear canal. What's ironic about bullfighting? Bill Hillman, a bullfighting enthusiast, wrote a book called How to Survive the Bulls of Pamplona, all about how to avoid being gored by bulls. 3 weeks later, after the release of the book, he was gored by a bull. What's ironic about spelling bees? In 2011, the winners of an elementary school spelling bee in Utah received a trophy reading Viewmont Spelling Bee, first place. Quite the example of irony. Not only the trophy contained a misspelling, but the word spelling, but it was the word spelling. There's three L's in this spelling of spelling bee. What's ironic about the Beatles? In 2002, a tree was planted in a park in Los Angeles in memory of Beatle guitarist George Harrison. The tree later died after being infested by, you got it, Beatles. What's ironic about the McDonald's jingle? Before he became a star, Pharrell Williams was fired from McDonald's three different times. Years later, he would help write and produce the company's iconic I'm Lovin' It jingle. What's ironic about Match.com? Gary Crimmin, the founder of Match.com, encouraged everyone he knew to join it, including his girlfriend. She eventually left him for a man she met on Match.com. Oh, now that's irony. What's ironic about crossword puzzles? When crossword puzzles debuted in the early 20th century, the New York Times was very critical of them, calling them a primitive sort of mental exercise. In 1942, the Times published its first crossword puzzle, and today the New York Times crossword is the most famous one in America. What's ironic about lifeguards? In 1985, a group of New Orleans lifeguards gathered at the municipal pool to celebrate the fact that no one had drowned at the pool that past summer. After the party, they discovered the fully clothed body of a man who had drowned in the pool. What's ironic about lawsuits? In 2009, the Guinness Book of World Records named Jonathan Lee Riches the record holder for suing the largest number of people, angrily declaring that the Guinness Book has no right to publish my work, my legal masterpieces. He sued them. What's ironic about being expelled from school? In the 1950s, 12-year-old David Ingram was kicked out of grammar school by the headmaster, who said that he never amounted to much. 55 years later, the same school commissioned Ingram, now an art teacher, to paint a portrait of that very headmaster. So Ingram definitely got the last laugh. What's ironic about Crayola crayons? In 1990, after 35 years of working at Crayola, the retiring CEO, Edward Moser, revealed that he was colorblind. Now, that's ironic. What's ironic about an anti-piracy group? In 2014, the Business Software Alliance posted an anti-piracy ad that read, "Your pot of gold is right here." But eagle-eyed users noted the image of a pot of gold they used was actually a photo of a baker's St. Patrick's Day cake that the BSA had used without authorization. And what's ironic about Alanis Morissette? None of the song lyrics in Alanis Morissette's song Ironic are an example of irony. As Morissette herself allegedly said, the irony of Ironic is that it's not ironic a song at all. And with that, let's get a little more serious. Drama in real life. 30 minutes left to breathe. Caught in a massive avalanche and buried alive under a blanket of snow, Ken Scott knew death was just a matter of time. Ken Scott kicked off his covers and leapt out of bed at his home in Rocky Mountain town of Mulan, Idaho. It was 6 a.m. on January 7, 2020, and he was on a mission. He'd just heard on the radio that nearby Silver Mountain Resort had been blessed with nearly a foot and a half of new snow. A self-confessed sea addict who'd worked in the industry for the past 30 years as a ski patroller and equipment salesperson, he didn't want to miss the big dump of fresh powder. These conditions are what skiers live for. Even veterans like Scott, who is 55, still skied 100 days a year. His wife, Ruth Scott, also loved hitting the slopes, but today she had other plans, so he ventured off alone. When Scott reached Silver Mountain's locker room, he bumped into his friend Rebecca Hurley-Patano, 58, a former ski instructor who had also been a regular on these slopes for more than two decades. "Can you believe it?" she said as they changed into their boots. 16 inches. Are you ready?" as if she had to ask. For the next hour, the pair skied on various runs under lightly overcast skies, making fresh tracks. They were both in a playful mood, bantering as they tackled the steep runs. Once while heading up the lift, they noticed that the 6,200-foot Wardner Peak, home to the challenging expert-level trail named 16-1, was now open. It had been closed all seasons over concerns what skiers might cause an avalanche. But that morning, patrols had set off 13 explosive charges on the peak to clear loose snow from its upper slopes, reducing the chance of a snowslide. "What do you think?" asked Hurd Platano. "Let's go for it," Scott replied. There's no direct chairlift to 16-1, so skiers reach it by traversing through deep snow and trees. Along the way, Scott and Hurd Platano recognized other Silver Mountain regulars also heading for the run. They waved to Warren Kay, 67, Burr Furzak, 62, and Carl Humphreys, 58. Everyone is excited to be the first this season to ski the steep, powder-rich run. When they reached the slope's crest, Hurt and Patino excitedly looked back at Scott. The huge, toothy grin on his bearded face was all the incentive she needed. She pointed her skis downhill and took off. Almost immediately, the snow beneath her gave way. In a minute, she realized what was happening. "Avalanche!" she yelled to Scott, who was not far behind. He responded, fear in his voice. "This is happening." Instantly, both were hit by heavy slabs of snow that would pummel and carry them some 500 feet down the mountain. Hurley-Patano felt it closer, moving quickly up her back and over her shoulders, then heavy against her neck. Snow filled the space in front of her and piled up around her thighs. She was engulfed. Scott, too, was swept downhill when his feet were ripped out from under him. He remembered the avalanche survival lessons he'd learned while working ski patrol. Keep your head up, try to swim, stay on top of the snow. But the snow was too powerful, and it tumbled him like a load of clothes in a washing machine. When he finally came to rest, he was lying on his left side and almost completely buried, skis and poles still attached. But through the foot or so of snow on top, he could see daylight, and he could move his right hand and forearm. In his cocoon, he cleared snow from his face and told himself, "Shallow barrier. I can breathe. I am alive. Stay composed." Hurley-Patano had ended up partially buried in a tight, squatting position. She scooped snow away and managed to pull herself out. Then her rescue training kicked in. She looked uphill to where she'd last seen Scott and shouted his name. She was relieved when his pole poked through the snow. In response, he was about 10 feet away. She also called the fellow skiers Fusak and Kays. They were farther down the slope, partially buried, but were able to respond to her. She had no idea where Humphreys was. Scott couldn't move much under the weight of the snow. Still, he felt confident he could survive this. Hurley-Patano now knew where he was, and the rescue was just a matter of waiting. With his free right hand, he cleared about a foot and a half of snow above his face for breathing room. This was crucial. He knew that breathing his exhaled carbon dioxide for too long is poisonous. So as he had been taught back at ski patrol, he focused on oxygenating, taking small breaths to conserve oxygen, thinking positive thoughts, and staying calm. As adrenaline coursed through her body, Hernapetano knew she had to reach the other skiers and uncover them quickly so they could breathe. She focused on these thoughts. We're alive. Be fast and stay in control. It had been several minutes since the avalanche had struck. Because she knew Scott was okay, Hernapetano first crawled downhill to help Fusak, who was buried up to his neck. As she knelt above him, scooping snow from his face, the air around her suddenly exploded. Whoop! It was a sound that nobody who has ever heard it can forget. A massive avalanche. This one was much bigger than the first. Tons more snow came tumbling down the mountain, and before Hernapetano could even turn around, she was slammed in the back by a wall of white stuff. She was tossed over Fusak's head and carried another 20 feet downhill. Once again, she was only partially buried. Lucky, most of the snow had gone over her body and continued down the hill. After she freed herself, she looked up the mountain and was terrified to realize that the landscape had been completely transformed. There were massive new mounds of snow where before there had been none at all. All her points of reference had disappeared. Worst of all, there was no sign of Scott, Fusak, or Kay, and Humphreys hadn't reappeared. This time her friends had truly been buried alive. When Kent Scott heard the roar, he immediately knew the unthinkable was happening. I'm dead, he thought. While it didn't budge him from where he'd been trapped, there was so much more snow piled on him, 9 feet of it, that his world had gone completely black, completely silent. That wasn't the only difference. Now he was totally immobile, and the breathing space he cleared was gone. As he laid on his left side, tons of snow pressed on him so heavily that he couldn't move anything but his eyelids beneath his goggles and his toes inside his boots. He couldn't even twitch a finger, let alone move his right arm as he'd been able to before. It was as if he'd been paralyzed, cemented in snow. Even worse, he couldn't expand his chest enough to take a full breath. He gasped for small ropes of air. Still, he knew what he had to do to try to survive a second time. First, he shut his eyes. He preferred seeing images in his mind to the empty darkness that surrounded him. He created a mental checklist of what he was still wearing from head to toe. Hat, goggles, poles, cloots, skis. That means there's nothing on the surface for rescuers to see. What about his friend Rebecca? Is she okay or is she buried too? He knew the patrols had no idea where they'd been skiing. She was the only person who could locate him. He also knew his chances of survival were small. He'd have a 90% chance of living if rescue came within 15 minutes, but only about 30% if he lay under the snow for 30 minutes. About three-quarters of an avalanche victims die from asphyxia, or suffocation. He tried to fight back panic, but when he thought of his family, of his wife Ruth and his daughters Tash and the grandkids, he felt helpless, then doomed. That was not the way he wanted to die. His training had taught him that panicking was not only useless but dangerous. It used a valuable air. Yet he could control his fear. He let out a mighty anguish scream that no one would hear. Ah! Hernapetano unzipped her parka and pulled out her phone. She didn't have the number for Ski Patrol headquarters, but she did know some staffers' numbers. She called Ernie Silva, who happened to be a friend of Scott's. Hey, Ruber, he answered, using his nickname for her. Long time no see. How? She cut him off. There's been an avalanche on 16-1, and Ken is in it. Bring help. Word spread quickly. Soon Silver's Mountain patrols and skiers were heading to the avalanche site with shovels and 10-foot poles with which they could probe for buried skiers. Not waiting for them, Hernapetano clambered over piles of snow where they thought she had seen Scott and Fusak before the second avalanche. Alone on the mountain, she used her gloved hands to dig frantically at the hard-packed snow. Her friends' lives, she knew, depended on her. Encased in the avalanche, Scott drifted between terror and panic. His rib cage compressed, and he could only take tiny breaths, using his diaphragm to help him force in air. He fought to stay positive by focus on his breathing. But then he tried to move his head or a finger, and when he couldn't, he'd panic again. With so much more snow on top of him, he feared ski patrols wouldn't be able to locate him. His time was ticking away. He thought of his tight-knit group of friends who called themselves the Boys, three of whom were world-class skiers, who had lost their lives in a massive avalanche at Tunnel Creek in Washington State in 2012. This is the end, he thought. I'm going to join the boys. Within 10 minutes after the second avalanche, the slope was abuzz with some 50 rescuers, including red-coated ski patrols, as well as volunteer skiers. Like a commander marshaling her troops, Hernapetano stayed calm and pointed out where she thought her friends were buried. Rescuers formed a horizontal line along the slope, each standing just 2 feet apart, and inserted their probes down into the deep, chunky snow, hoping to hit and locate the buried skiers. First responders stood above the probe line and repeatedly called out, "Probe right, probe center, probe left, step forward." 40 minutes into the search, a rescuer shouted, "A strike!" Bill Fusek, unconscious but alive, was dug out of more than 9 feet of snow. Seeing his location, Herta Pitano had a better idea of where Scott might be buried. She pointed to a spot some 10 feet farther up and, pumped up with adrenaline, screamed at the rescuers, "There! Move there! Faster!" Scott, struggling to breathe, was frustrated. He knew that his 30-minute survival window had come and gone, and he had resigned himself to death. And yet, he wasn't dying. Why is this dragging on so long, he wondered. But a new sensation reassured him. It was a feeling of warmth that he knew was a sign of hypothermia. "I'll be asleep soon," he thought, "and this hell will be over." Then he felt a slight pressure on his right hip. A probe? He anxiously prayed to feel it again. A minute passed, and then two. Nothing. He'd been trained how to use a rescue probe, and he knew if the rescue hit something, they'd leave the probe in place as a marker. But the probe was gone, and a flicker of hope vanished. They moved along the grid, he thought. My one-in-a-million chance. He felt himself fading away. Suddenly a vibration. The pressure on his body seemed to be changing. Was that the sound of shovels hitting snow? He started shouting, hoping that anyone stand above would hear. It took rescuers 5 minutes to dig through the 9 feet of snow and uncover Scott's face, goggles still on. He gulped in fresh air and saw the gray sky above, along with 30 or 40 people standing over him smiling, while others continued to dig him free. He couldn't believe it. He had survived 2 avalanches. His arms were freed, and he spotted Herta Pitano among his rescuers and pulled her down on top of him, almost squeezing the breath out of her. "Ken, you've got to let go," she told him as joy and relief filled her. "We have to get you out here and get you help." He smiled and continued hugging her. "I can't let go." While Ken Scott, Bill Fusek, and Warren Cave survived, 3 others, including Carl Humphreys, lost their lives. Scott suffered no major injuries, although he and Herta Pitano have suffered from a form of post-traumatic stress syndrome and received counseling to deal with it. His love of skiing undiminished just 9 days after his rescue. Scott was back skiing on Silver Mountain. And that was the last of the December-January Reader's Digest. We're now going to start the February Reader's Digest. I know it's a week into February, but hey. Happens to be the 100th anniversary edition. A Century of Stories. This is from the editor. "It couldn't be more excited to join Reader's Digest as we celebrate our 100th anniversary. Since 1922, this magazine has shared stories about remarkable people across the country and the kind and heroic things they do for one another. I grew up in a family of storytellers. My father, a police officer in our central Illinois town, came home every day with stories about the people in our community, funny anecdotes or dramatic stories that revealed the lives of individuals in our town and what they went through every day. My mother was a gifted storyteller, and her job in the front office of our local middle school provided a lot of material. My sister and I heard about classmates who were caught skipping school or forced by the principal to confess to pranking an unpopular teacher. She would deliver a play-by-play to us, laughing about the kids and the things they do. My sister and I learned how to find and tell our own stories in a way that held Mom and Dad's attention and earned their laughs. I suspect those conversations pushed me toward journalism, a way of telling stories to an audience beyond the dinner table. In this special anniversary edition, we look at some of the incredible stories from famous writers, politicians, everyday heroes, and average Americans that have filled the pages of Reader's Digest for a century. We also talk about humor, health, and how to feel hopeful about the next century. Of course, there is too much for one issue, so be sure to visit us online at rd.com/100th for even more from the Reader's Digest archives. Most of all, thank you for being a part of the first 100 years of Reader's Digest. I look forward to hearing and sharing your stories for years to come, and I will see if I can't pull up those things and see if there's some interesting articles on that 100th anniversary thing. So let's do some letters. My most unforgettable road trip. When I read the traveler who was traveled to a free Thanksgiving meal while passing through Wyoming in the November issue, I knew it was Michael Lujan's restaurant, Michael's Big City Steakhouse. He has done community Thanksgiving meals for years and also delivered to those who can't come in. Years ago, my mom passed on Thanksgiving morning. Mike delivered enough food to feed us for days, free of charge. Carla Townsend, El Paso, Texas. Everyday heroes. Ben Kuo's locating a lost hiker based on the photo he texted to a friend in November. made me think of our own hiking hack, taking a screenshot of our compass app to see our elevation and coordinates. When lost, send it to someone who can help track you down. That's from Cindy Johnson in Gilbert, Arizona. Work out your worries by writing. My mother also wrote through her unease, as this story suggests, but we place her notes to God in our Bible, which she eventually gave to me. When looking for a home 30 years later, I wrote a list of everything we wanted, including a pool, per my husband's request, and placed it in the Bible. We found our ideal home, but I forgot to ask that the pool be in perfect condition and filled with water. Now we make our writing very detailed. That's from Kari Laura in Phoenix, Arizona. Run over by a speedboat. The story about a snorkeler losing his arm after getting hit by a speedboat and then forgiving the driver was among the most compelling I've ever read. Here was a story of health and loss, sea and shore, healing and the hope to endure out of the darkness into the light. Simply marvelous. Leander Jones, Northbound, Alabama. Where oh where? I'm a rail fan, and I immediately recognize this photo of a steam locomotive crossing a bridge as Boone County, Iowa. This bridge crosses the river valley between Boone and Ames, and I've been over it and under it multiple times. That's from Richard Hunter in Aurora, Colorado. We found a fix. We suggested using toothpicks to raise a pot lid and prevent the pot from boiling over. I prevent boilovers with just laying a wooden spoon over the open pot. The spoon will pop most of the bubbles on contact. Hasn't failed me yet. Pam Sinella Grove, LaGrange, Georgia. 13 things. My computer was recently subject of an attack similar to what's described in item 11 in your list of facts about the dark web. Luckily, I was able to escape money fraud, but it took a few days to get my computer back. However, I didn't know there was a place to report it until I read this article, so thank you for that. Dorothy Collins in Lihun, Hawaii. Coping with dry eye. Your article in November mentioned a doctor's visit for heat and compression treatment. I bought an inexpensive microwavable moist heat eye compress online and used it for several minutes at bedtime to help open the oil glands. Plus, the warmth and ritual helped me relax and fall asleep. No more messy washcloth compresses for me. Julie Evans from Minneapolis, Minnesota. So nice you have to read it twice. The Quality Inn in Kodiak, Tennessee, turning into a shelter during historic winter storm, showed so much kindness that I read the story twice. For Sean Patel to open his hotel to locals in need during the storm and power outage at Christmas time, and for just $25, the lowest price in the corporate regulations would allow, was priceless. The town is a better place because of Patel and his staff, Annette Wolf in Shelton, Connecticut. The World of Good Reasons to Smile. Bearing gifts. And there's a picture of a bear costume walking down the middle of a highway. Jesse Larios isn't the first person to walk for a good cause, but he's the first one to hoof it from Los Angeles to New York City while wearing a 70-pound bear suit. Larios, 33, quit his job at a health insurance company to raise money for the disabled, the environment, cancer, mental health, and autism. His journey began on July 5th and ended in Times Square on November 14th, raising $85,287 via pledges for people who followed his track on the news and via social media. Bear Sun, as Larios dubbed his furry alter ego, makes people happy, he says. I'm all about laughter and smiles. And with that, we're going to switch over to Consumer Reports. And we're going to look at top-rated smart thermostats to start off. As temperature drops across much of the U.S., fuel prices are rising. No kidding. In fact, the U.S. Energy Information Administration predicts that heating oil bills will rise by 43%, natural gas by 30%, and electricity by 6% this winter. Fortunately, smart thermostats can help by offsetting these climbing prices by automatically lowering your home's heat when they're asleep or not at home. These gadgets can save you at least $50 a year or more on your energy costs. That means a smart thermostat could pay for itself in a few years, depending on the model. In our labs, we test how easy it is to set up and use a thermostat and any smart features such as voice control. Of the 40 models in our ratings, two stand out, the top-scoring Nest Learning Thermostat and the Best Buy Braeburn Blue Link, which offers similar features such as geofencing, which auto-adjusts your house temperature when you leave and return. To help you pick the right one for you, we compared their strengths and weaknesses. CR's take. The Nest earns top spot with its excellent rating for heating and cooling automation that learns your preferences and can create its own schedule based on them. The Braeburn doesn't do this. It also offers smart feature like a sensor that detects when people are home. But its manual controls aren't as easy to use as those of the Braeburn, but you can also do stuff online with it. My girlfriend has that. CR's take. The Braeburn is easy to use than the Nest and is a CR best buy, thanks to its impressive performance and lower price. It has many of the same features like geofencing, plus a few extras the Nest doesn't, such as a touchscreen and a wireless temperature sensor that can be placed in another room to help Braeburn heat and cool your home more precisely. And the Nest Learning Thermostats cost $250. They both have smart IQs, and the Braeburn is $120. Manual operation on the Nest is not very good. On the Braeburn, it's double star up. Automation on both of them are double star up. The warranty for the Nest is 2 years. For the Braeburn, is 5 years. Remote sensor included. The Nest, no. The Braeburn, yes. Learns behavior. The Nest does. The Braeburn does not. And the power source is interchangeable rechargeable battery for the Nest and C-wire 24-volt AC for the Braeburn. So it has to be wired into your house. 1940, time travel. Chicken. 1940s, our testers rated 14 brands of chicken soup. Cross and Blackwell soup comes in first. Most surprising, 6 brands didn't contain any chicken. And those of you who are listening who are old enough to remember Arthur Godfrey talking about Nestle's chicken soup and how the chicken just walked through it just to give it some flavor. 1952, the first Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise opens up near Salt Lake City. 1963, Professor Robert C. Baker is widely credited with inventing chicken nuggets at a lab at Cornell University. 1978, CR begins its decades-long fight urging the U.S. government to prohibit the routine use of antibiotics in livestock production. In 1983, chicken McNuggets are sold nationwide at McDonald's for the first time. In 1988, we test chicken offerings and find that only Burger King's chicken tenders are solely made from breast meat. McDonald's tenders include chicken skin. 1992, chicken surpasses beef as America's most popular meat. Annual consumption is now 66.5 pounds eaten per person. 1997, CR's expert taster samples 15 chicken offerings from 6 food chains. McDonald's Grilled Chicken Deluxe is the best nutritional buy. 2010, our tests find contamination in 66% of chicken. We call on the USDA to make chicken less risky to eat. In 2014, we analyzed 316 raw samples of chicken from all major brands. All contain worrisome levels of bacteria. In 2022, labels on grocery store chicken indicate how humanely a chicken is raised. And a good label to look for is the animal welfare approved. Can you get a better price even after you paid? Imagine this. You purchase a big screen TV for $1,000, but a week later you see that price drop to $800. You could have saved $200 if you only had waited a week. Returning the TV and then buying it again at the lower price can be a cumbersome process. Who wants to lug the TV back to the store or pay for return shipping? But there may be an easier way to recoup that money. Some retailers will refund you the difference between the price you paid and the store's current sale price if you ask within a specified time period. And several retailers will even match a lower price you find in another store. Company policies vary, but they can be more generous than you might think. And around the holidays, some retailers, such as Best Buy and Target, make their policies more generous. At Ride, we compiled a look at the policies of 8 major retailers. How many days do I have to ask for? The Home Depot, you have 30 to 90 days. If you bought the item in the store, visit in-store customer service. If you bought it online, request a refund on HomeDepot.com. Does the retailer match the lower price found at other stores? Yes, indeed. Crutchfield, you have 60 days. Ask for a price match refund via phone or chat at Crutchfield.com. They don't match others. Costco, you have 30 days. If you bought the item in the store, visit in-store customer service. If you bought it online, request a refund on Costco.com. They also don't match other retailers. Best Buy, 15 days for most items, longer for items purchased between 10/18/21 and 1/2/22. If you bought the item in the store, visit in-store customer service. If you bought it online, request via help chat on BestBuy.com. Request must be made during the return and exchange period for the item. They do match other store prices. Bed Bath & Beyond, you have 14 days. Call or visit customer services with your receipt, invoice, or shipping confirmation and documentation of a lower price. And they also will match others, as does Kohl's. Kohl's, you have 14 days as well. If you bought the item in-store, visit in-store customer service with documentation of a lower price. If you bought it online, request a refund on Kohl's.com. Online prices from competing retailers are not honored. Target, 14 days longer for items purchased between 10/20 and 12/24/21. Call or visit customer service with your receipt and documentation of a lower price, and they will match lower prices found in other stores. And Macy's, 10 days. Email proof of an exact product match with lower price to customer service at Macy's.com. Keep pet hair from going everywhere. Removing pet hair from clothing, throws, or even your own bedding can be a real chore for you and your washing machine. Throwing fur-covered items directly into the wash can result in clumps of pet hair that stick to fabrics and sides of the washer drum, potentially clogging the appliance's pumps and preventing water from draining properly. And hair that's still plastered to the drum can end up in your next load of laundry. That's why it's important to reduce the amount of pet hair on your bedding and clothing before you put it in the wash. Here's how to keep pet hair off your wardrobe and bedding and out of your washing machine. Tools you need: a lint roller or masking tape, rubber gloves, dryer sheets, fabric softener, rag or cloth. Step 1. Brush your pet every day or as close to every day as possible, placing what's in the brush directly into a trash bag. This helps keep loose pet hair to a minimum. Step 2. Remove embedded hair with a lint roller. For odd items like sheets, put on a rubber glove, dampen it, and run it over the fabric. The hair will cling to the glove, so it's easier to gather and discard. Step 3. Run items through a 10-minute no-heat dryer cycle with the dryer sheet. The tumbling helps loosen the stubborn pet hair, while the dryer sheet prevents hair from bonding to fabric. Once out of the dryer, give the items a good shake. Clean the dryer's lint filter where pet hair collects after every load. Step 4. Move the items into the washing machine. Add a small amount of fabric softener, which helps loosen pet hair. Don't use more than the bottle directs, because too much can build up in the machine and cause other problems. Once the laundry is done, move it back to the dryer. Step 5. Run a wash cycle without laundry to clean the washing machine. After the cycle ends, wipe down the machine's drum with a wet cloth, which would pick up any leftover pet hair still clinging to the sides. Is it time for a new washing machine? Here are some of TR's top-rated models under $900. The Maytag MHW5630, $855, scored 81. The Samsung WF45T6000 at 760, and that also got a fairly high score. And the Amana NFW5800, $720, got a good score as well. Alcohol-free libations you'll love. These tasty, zero-proof drinks are the perfect way to celebrate a special occasion or to simply unwind at the end of the day. The recipes, created by CR dietitian Stephanie Clark, all contain good-for-you ingredients such as probiotics, and they're also fairly low in sugar and calories. Our virgin kombucha mule, a twist on the traditional Moscow mule, uses blood oranges. Robust winter citrus is loaded with vitamin C. It also includes kombucha, a probiotic-rich fermented tea drink. The spiced hot toddy is a warming choice on a cold day. It's slightly sweet and infused with spices like nutmeg. It's also rich in vitamin C and other antioxidants that may help ward off inflammations. The cranberry apple fizz with vitamin C and E from Cranberry Juice is festive enough for New Year's Eve. Of course, we're past that, and easy to make. The kombucha mule, 8 ounces of blood orange juice, the juice of 3 to 4 blood oranges, 8 ounces of ginger kombucha, 2 teaspoons of lime juice, 2 orange slices for garnish, fresh mint leaves for garnish, has 63 calories, 15 grams of carbohydrate, 12 grams of total sugars, and 3 milligrams of sodium. Place 3 to 4 ice cubes or crushed ice into a traditional copper mule mug, shown above, and I've got a copper mule mug, or a short cocktail glass. Pour half the blood orange juice, half the kombucha, and a teaspoon of lime juice, or more to taste, into each mug and stir. Garnish with orange slices and mint sprigs. 2. Spiced hot toddy. 16 ounces water, 2 green tea bags, 2 teaspoons honey, 1 quarter cup orange juice, 1 tablespoon lemon juice, 1 quarter teaspoon turmeric, 1 quarter teaspoon cinnamon, 1/8 a teaspoon nutmeg. Cinnamon sticks and lemon wedges for garnish are optional. Has 40 calories, 11 carbs. Total sugars are 8, sodium is 8. Directions: heat the water in a small sauce pan until almost boiling. Reduce heat to low and add the tea bags. Let steep for 2 minutes. Remove tea bags and add remaining ingredients and whisk in the pan until combined and heated through. Serve in glasses meant for hot liquids. garnish with a cinnamon stick and lemon wedge if desired. Cranberry apple fizz. 6 ounces, 3/4 cup of unsweetened cranberry juice. 6 ounces, 3/4 cup of sparkling apple cider. 1/2 cup of fresh frozen cranberries. 2 sprigs of fresh rosemary. That has 80 calories, 20 grams of carbohydrates, 19 grams of sugars, that's a lot, and 4 milligrams of sodium. Add ice cubes to a short cocktail glass, pour half the cranberry juice into each glass, then top with half the sparkling cider. Add cranberries, which when frozen, double as extra ice cubes. Garnish with rosemary sprigs. Get cleaner tap water with an under-the-sink filter. Under-the-sink water filters can deliver cleaner, better-tasting drinking water from a dispenser right next to your kitchen faucet. These filters make removing lead, chlorine, and other contaminants much easier than water filter pitchers. They're inherently more convenient, says Richard Handel, the CR project leader who oversees water filters. Just flip the tap on and the filtered water comes out. Of course, under-the-sink models cost more to purchase, install, and maintain. The filter cartridges typically need to replace every few months, then water filter pitchers. So you want to make sure to pick one that offers excellent filtration. We tested 8 under-the-sink models, all certified to NSF certification standard for removing lead and chlorine, as well as for flavor and odor reduction. First, we spiked control water sample with contaminants that smell and taste like metal, compost, damp soil, sewage treatment plant, or chlorinated pool. Gross. And the water is put through each filter before we examine how well the filter removed these taints. Our experts also measure flow rate, how quickly a model filters 1 gallon of water. Our clogging score reflects how much the filter's flow rate slowed over the filter's lifespan. The slower the flow became, the lower the clogging score. The 4 models below did the best across our rigorous tests at a variety of prices. The Multi-Pure Aqua Versa MP750, $430, got a 5 out of 5 on flavor and odor reduction, 5 out of 5 on a flow rate, 5 out of 5 on clogging, and it cost about $90 a year. That's for filters, I'm sure. The Brondell Coral UC100 single stage at $100 scored almost as much as the previous one, got a 5.5 flavor and odor reduction, a 4.5, 4 out of 5 flow rate, and a 5 out of 5 hour clogging, but it cost about $100 a year to run. Brondell Coral UC300 3-stage at $150. 5.5 out of flavor and oil reduction, 4 out of 5 on the flow rate, 5 out of 5 on clogging, and it cost $75 a year. The Culligan Easy US Easy 4 at $85. It's got almost the highest score as the others. 5.5 on flavor and odor reduction, 4 out of 5 on the flow rate, 5 out of 5 on the clogging, and it costs $98 a year to run. Then we have some recalls. Magnuson Home Nova 5 Series 5 drawers, chests. Magnuson Home is recalling about 13,200 Nova Series 5 drawer chests because they are unstable if not anchored to the wall, posing a tip-over and entrapment hazard that can result in death or serious injuries to children. The chests do not comply with the performance requirements of the voluntary industry standard. The chests were sold at furniture stores nationwide from August 2009 through August 2015 for about $600. What to do is stop using the chest and call 833-748-0210 or go to Magnuson.com for details. Uish Outdoor Snorkels. Uish Outdoors is recalling about 76,000 Oceanic adult dry top snorkels because the bottom purge valve on the snorkels can leak, allowing water to entry and posing a drowning hazard. The snorkels were sold at Costco stores nationwide and online at Costco.com from February 2021 through July 2021 for about $40. Stop using the snorkel. Follow the instructions online at OceanicSnorkel.com to register for a free replacement, shipping included. MyCharge Power Banks. MyCharge is recalling about 67,000 MyCharge Power Banks because the lithium-ion battery can overheat and ignite, posing fire and burn hazards. The power banks were sold at Best Buy, Brainstorm, Hirsch Gifts, Hudson News, InMotion, Laypine, Power Cells, Projector World, and Target stores nationwide. Also online at Amazon, MyCharge.com, Target.com, and through as the U.S. Marine and Navy, Marine Corps and Navy Exchange, from August 2018 through December 2019 for $70 to $100. Stop using the power bank. Contact MyCharge at 888-251-2026 or go to mycharge.com for details and instructions on returning the battery to obtain a refund in the form of an electronic voucher for the full purchase price, plus a 25% bonus for redemption. Kohl's Anti-Gravity Chairs. Kohl's is recalling about 31,000 Sonoma Goods for Life branded anti-gravity chairs because the care can break or collapse when weight is applied, posing a fall hazard. The chairs were sold at Kohl's stores nationwide and online at Kohl's.com from January 2019 through June 2021 for about $240. Stop using the chair and return it to the nearest Kohl's store. Customers with a receipt will receive a full refund, and customers without a receipt will receive a store credit. Call Kohl's at 855-564-5755 or go to Kohl's.com for more details. Martha Stewart Collection of Oil and Vinegar Cruets. Macy's is recalling about 26,000 Martha Stewart Collection Oil and Vinegar Cruets because the glass portion of the cruets can break during use, posing a laceration hazard. The cruets were stored at Macy's stores nationwide and online at Macy's.com from July 17, 2017 through July 2021 for about $22. Stop using the cruets, return it to a Macy's store, and call Macy's at 888-257-5949 for details. Gas One Propane Hoses. Gas One is calling about 19,500 propane adapter hoses because the hose can swell during use and cause gas to leak, posing a fire hazard. The hoses were sold online at Amazon, eBay, GasOn.com, Home Depot, and Walmart from December 2020 through February 2020 for $9 to $18. Stop using the adapter hose. Contact Gas One at 800-698-5070 or go to GasOn.com for details. Hobby Lobby Wood Stools. Hobby Lobby is recalling about 14,000 white wood stools because they can break during use, posing fall and injury hazards. The stools were sold at Hobby Lobby stores nationwide from June 2021 through July 2021 for about $80. Stop using the stool and return it to the nearest Hobby Lobby store for a full refund, or call 800-326-7931 or go to HobbyLobby.com for details. Juvie Jogging Strollers. Juvie, that's J-O-O-V-Y, is recalling about 9,200 Zoom 360 ultralight jogging strollers because the stroller's front wheel bearing can fail or detach, posing fall and injury hazards. The strollers were sold at independent specialty juvenile stores nationwide and online at Juvie.com, Amazon BuyBuyBaby.com, and Target.com from May 2020 through December 2020 for about $250. Stop using the stroller and call 800-495-8718 or go to juvie.com for details and get a free repair kit to replace the front wheel fork bearing. Polaris Phoenix 200 ATVs. Polaris is recalling about 13,000 model year 2021 Phoenix 200 ATVs because the throttle speed control can break and become stuck, posing a crash hazard. The ATVs were sold at Polaris dealers nationwide from September 2010 through June 2021 for $3,500 to $4,300. Stop using the ATV, call 800-765-2747, or go to Polaris.com and click on Off-Road Safety Recalls for details and to get a free replacement throttle speed control bracket. Product update. Save big on a great new printer. The best models on our test deliver crisp text and sharp images and won't cost you hundreds for ink. It shows a picture of the Brother HL2370 black and white laser printer for $140, the Epson EcoTank ET2720 all-in-one inkjet printer for $200, and the Canon PIXMA 20TR7020 all-in-one inkjet for $150. It's easy to see why you might want a printer at home, even in the digital age. They're great for seeing your work on paper, for homework, and for art projects. Certain official documents may need to be handwritten signatures, or you may want to print a recipe, letter, or shipping label. But buying a printer can be oddly complicated. You have to decide which basic type you want, laser or inkjet, and which features you might need. And if you've been burned by high ink prices before, you know how important it is to find one that wastes your money. To streamline the decision process, start by asking yourself a few simple questions. Then refer to our ratings. How much do you print? Ink costs can quickly add up, so it's essential to factor in your usage into the equation when choosing a printer. Begin by thinking about how you plan to use your printer. If you need to print in color, expect to print upwards of 30 or 40 pages a month, we recommend investing in a tank printer, which is an inkjet that uses a refillable ink reservoir instead of ready-to-use cartridges. Tank printers do typically cost more up front, between $200 and $600, but the savings add up fast because annual ink costs are usually under $10. By comparison, the cheapest traditional inkjet sell for about $50, but many use well over $100 worth of ink per year. Expert tip: our testers say you should be skeptical about any printer that costs less than $100. That's often the sign of a printer that will gouge you on ink. A conventional all-in-one inkjet can make sense for those who need color and print fewer than 30 pages a month. But an unused inkjet will pump ink through the machine to keep the printheads unclogged. So if you don't print often, look for a very good or excellent rating for maintenance ink use, or you'll waste money on ink that doesn't even wind up on a page. Excluding the exceptionally good and bad performers, typical ink costs range from about $30 to $150 per year. If you don't need color, go for black and white laser printer. Median toner costs for all-in-one black and white lasers are just $15 per year. That's so cost-effective, you might consider sacrificing color. Lasers are great no matter how often you print because they don't have printheads to clean. Plus, they use toner, a powder that has a much longer shelf life than ink. Are graphics important? Color laser printers are best for professional quality graphics, but they're expensive, $300 and up. Inkjets are more affordable, and the best deliver graphics that are clear and legible, though images may have unsaturated colors and edges that aren't perfectly crisp. If you want to print photos, look for an inkjet that scores well for photo quality, but know that those models tend to use a lot of ink. Do you need other features? If you want a printer that can also copy, scan, and fax, look for an all-in-one model laser or inkjet, the most widely sold printer type on the market. Almost every new printer works wirelessly. Certain models don't have an Ethernet port, so double-check if you want to hardwire your machine to the Internet instead of using Wi-Fi. Another feature that isn't available on every model is auto-duplexing for printing on both sides of a page. Saves paper and money. The real cost of that bargain printer. Start shopping for a new printer and you'll see prices from $35 to $750. Which would you rather pay? The answer isn't as easy as it seems because you can also have to factor in the cost of ink over time. Just like you think about fuel efficiency when you're buying a car. Take the Epson Workforce WF2850, for example. This all-in-one inkjet sells for as little as $70, which sounds like a deal, except we found that the average user would spend $171 per year on ink. To help you find a model's real price, CR's testers measure how quickly a printer burns through ink or toner during typical use and factor in the cost of replacement cartridges. We found that ink costs per year range from $3 to well over $100. You can use that number to help you compare models as you shop. As shown below, a seemingly low-priced printer may in fact be no bargain. The Epson EP Tank 2720 versus the Brother MFV J491. Retail price for the Epson is $200, for the Brother is $95. Annual ink cost for the Epson is $6, for the Brother it's $88. So the total is $230 versus $535 after 5 years. Okay, I'm going to start this article, but we won't be able to finish it, but it's okay. It's broken into 17 separate parts. The best way to review your body and the mind. Self-care is more than a buzzword. It's a must right now. Here are 17 fresh ideas that can shake up your routine and make you healthier and happier. And it shows a bunch of people eating, exercising, smiling. You know that you should probably get more exercise and sleep. You know that you should meditate, and that's important to eat less sugar and rein in your binge-watching. You know. But it has been challenging, in some ways catastrophic year and a half, almost 2 years now. So you're probably in a rut, almost everyone is, and don't know how to get your mojo back. Quit blaming yourself, behavior scientist B.J. Fogg, Ph.D., said in his book Tiny Habits, and don't waste time searching for one magic product that will make everything better. Instead, take your aspirations and break them down into tiny behaviors. The truth is, small adjustments and actions can add up. After you've the tried and true, just don't motivate you, we found a bunch of novel ways to help you get unstuck and restore your sense of well-being. So as I turn the page, let's get started. Calming your mind. Feeling worried and nervous is a reasonable response in certain circumstances. In October, a nationally representative consumer report study of 2,036 people, 42% of Americans said they're experiencing more anxiety than they did before the pandemic. Unattended to chronic stress can lead to digestive issues and headaches and is linked to a higher risk of anxiety, depression, and heart disease. But therapists are in short supply. So if your normal coping mechanisms aren't cutting it and you're looking for a practical new ways to ease your unease, considering the following de-stressors. If you suspect anxiety disorder, depression, alert your primary care provider or call 800-273-TLLK if you're in a moment of crisis. Cozy up under a weighted blanket. As we look for ways to cope with anxiety, cells of weighted blankets which are filled with small glass or plastic beads have risen. Think of the soothing effect of a hug, and you get a sense of the appeal. It's giving your body an external stimulus of comfort and safety, which can create comfort and safety in the brain, says Kate Truitt, PhD. There's some scientific reason for their popularity. A review published in the American Journal of Occupational Therapy in 2020 suggested that weighted blankets can be an effective way to quell anxiety, and a 2020 trial found that they're reduced insomnia and daytime fatigue in people with ADHD, anxiety, bipolar disorder, and depression. Interested? Aim for a blanket that's about 10% of your body weight. We'll continue that next week. For now, let's close out with some humor in uniform. We were hanging on the lounge of our naval supply ship when the executive officer walked in. He took one look at the pilot sitting atop a table and blew a gasket. "Don't sit on the table," he barked. "Is that what you do at home?" "No, sir," said the pilot calmly. "But then we don't land our helicopters on our roof either." During my teens, I was a squad leader at a military summer camp. We were required to wear our full uniform at all times, with no exceptions and no accessories or makeup allowed. One day, as I expected my team, I noticed that one of the female campers had exceptionally dark eyelids. "Are you wearing eyeliner?" I said. "No," she said defensively, then with a slight pause. "Why? Is it running?" Military truisms. Need to find an officer ASAP? Take a nap. Army food? The spoils of war. If you see a bomb disposal technician running, try to keep up with him. Overheard in the elevator of a New York City office building. "I just finished that article on cigarette smoking in the Reader's Digest, and I've decided to give up reading." And a couple of laughter of the best medicine. "How come you're late?" the boss asks his assistant as she walks in the door. "It was awful," she says. "I was walking down the street and saw a terrible accident. A man was lying in the middle of the street, badly injured, and there was blood everywhere. I'm just glad I took that first aid course." "What did you do?" "I sat down and put my head between my knees to keep from fainting." In England, booster shot is spelled Borchester shot. And with that, we've about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.